Hello, everybody. This is the Games Blurred Podcast, episode 3.
Is it episode 3? Or is it episode 2? Or 4?
Well, we've actually recorded 4 episodes, but, you know, we have 3. This is the third one. This is really the third one.
The official third one.
Anyway, the sound quality should be perfect now, guys, so you can actually hear us, we hope. Fingers crossed. Okay, so with me today, I have Oleg Brajnik.
Hello.
And Dean Gaffney.
Welcome back.
I'm in charge of the technical side of things today, so hopefully everything goes smoothly.
We're the lonely trio. We've been missing a few members today, but you know, we'll get through the news, we'll get through what we've been playing, the usual, see how it goes. So we'll start off. So last week, it was the 25th anniversary of the Nintendo Game Boy. So
memories.
It was launched in Japan on April 21st, 1989, exactly 25 years ago. This, I think this is, well, it's not huge news, but I mean, it's interesting news because...
I don't think it's very much news, Roddy.
It is, because the Game Boy has sort of defined what mobile gaming is to us nowadays.
It's really weird when you call it mobile gaming, it really doesn't seem that way.
No, but that was the start of mobile gaming. Like, back then, that was what mobile gaming was.
All the negative connotations that come with the word online gaming in these days...
mobile gaming.
Yeah. But I mean, we've all had gamers. I remember having the original grey brick,
which is
the one that's 25 years old.
Mine was yellow. I don't know if that was a different edition of it or what.
Are you sure?
It's the Game Boy Color.
This thing, it wasn't color, but it was like it was black and white, but it had a yellow casing.
Are you sure you didn't have a case on it?
I don't. I'm just the only one I remember. Unless I remember it differently.
That's interesting. Memories
and
we can sell it.
Absolutely. Do you still have it?
I believe I do somewhere. I mean, as a kid, I lost interest in it once I got my Game Boy Advance, and then.
Oh man, the Game Boy Advance! What a console!
Well, the initial Advance was actually kind of rubbish because it had no backlight. So
I didn't mind that. I had the original, the long one without flippity flip.
Oh, the SP was amazing. Love that
but then you had all the extra attachments where you had a handle and an extra battery and a light and a magnifying glass.
Yeah, I remember the Game Boy Color. I just had so many attachments on. I had this magnifying glass with the little light because I had no backlight. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was good. But yeah, I mean, maybe tell... What are some of your best memories? Game Boy memories?
Oh, man. I would say definitely... Okay, obviously, the one everyone will have, of course, is Pokemon.
Oh yeah, definitely. Jesus, we grew up with Pokemon.
Yeah,
every one of us.
But for me, I think my most fond memory was again the Game Boy Advance SP, and there was a game. Everyone, of course, knows Final Fantasy Tactics, which is highly celebrated. Now, Tactics Advance was a Game Boy Advance version. It's nowhere near as celebrated.
Mm.
However, when I was playing this, I hadn't played Tactics, and I thought it was fucking great.
It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, for me actually, I never really played the original. Tactics game. The first one I played was the Game Boy version, and I think same for Oleg.
I think I may have played that on the PSP.
I played
the advanced version first, and I think I completed it. It was quite a fun game. The story was a bit wishy washy. I wasn't a big fan of the story, but I did really enjoy the gameplay. The gameplay was the best part of that game.
Clarifying, I didn't get it for the PSP. I emulated the Game Boy on the PSP.
I think one of the thank you, Oleg.
Just in case somebody doesn't know.
Yeah, no, just
Oleg, you had a Game Boy.
You did, yeah.
I did.
But you never played Advance until. Tactics Advance until you emulated. Okay.
I just played Golden Sun when I had the Game Boy.
Oh, man, yeah. Golden Sun was the golden. Golden game of the Game Boy. I remember going into the World of Wonder. Well, we had a store called the World of Wonder, and it's basically like a Smith's.
I remember Burns World of Wonder,
yeah. And then they got rid of it in our town, but. Basically, I went in and they had. I was looking for a Game Boy Advance game. I don't think I had any. I might have had one or something. And they had Golden Sun, and I really want. I heard a lot about this game as this RPG, and you know, I hadn't seen any other RPGs for the console. So sure, I'll pick it up. It looks good, cool. It was 63 euro. €63.
Holy. Wow.
And I paid it. I actually paid it.
It didn't matter back then because we all had money.
I was like 10 or 11, so I got it for my birthday or something.
Oh, man.
But oh my god, that game! I don't even regret
worth every
paying
euro.
63
yeah.
euro. It wasn't my money, but I don't regret knowing that it was 63 euro and getting that as a present. It was amazing. It was a great game.
I remember one of my fondest memories actually of just to roll back to Tactics. Was I played that game tons of times. I completed it tons of times. Like I said, I really had fun with it. But I discovered a really, really easy to exploit glitch in that, where there's some levels where certain units, you have to destroy them. It's the goal to destroy a unit. And some, there's one or two levels where that unit doesn't move, doesn't take actions. So if you just kill every other unit on the board that can take an action, you just have free turns forever. And what you can do then is you can just buy 99 health potions, and every time you heal yourself, you get 10 XP. So you can just keep spamming health potions on yourself in an endless cycle and level up like 20 times in a single thing.
You rascal.
I made such OP characters in that. By the end of my final save, I remember I was max level before like I completed the first couple of quests, because one of these quests comes up really early. And by the end of the game, I had like, I'd gone around the class tree, so I had all different abilities from different classes, so I could dual wield two-handed swords, and I had boots that let me teleport.
Wait, dual wield two-handed swords?
Yeah, there's one.
So you're holding with your feet and your hands.
No, if I recall,
just spinning around like
if I recall correctly, what it was is there was one passive from one class called Monkey Grip that let you wield a one-handed or two-handed sword in one hand, and then there was another passive from the I think ninja class that let you dual wield swords if they were one-handed. So if you combine the two of them, you can dual wield two-handed
swords.
If I remember correctly, it might have been just those dual wielding one-handers. I can't remember. I'm pretty sure I actually managed to make that work.
Welcome to Nostalgia Cast.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, let's move on from nostalgia and Game Boy and all that, move to something a little bit more modern. So PS4 sales have been announced by Sony. They've actually sold 7 million of the consoles as of the 6th of April, which is a significant amount. It's actually the best selling console of all time. The fastest selling console of all time is what I meant to say.
So day per sale is actually
Day per sale is the fastest, and then the next one after that, the Xbox One is actually doing really well as well. Not as well, but they announced that the Xbox One has shipped 5 million units to stores. So that means they've probably sold about 4 to 4.5 million. So again, not as impressive as Sony's, but very impressive. It's still a really one of the fastest selling consoles of all time.
Next gen penetration seems to be doing quite well. I'm quite surprised with that.
People were very unsure of how the PS4 and Xbox One were going to do. This is mostly because we had the recession on, people don't have as much money. People wondering, oh, are these consoles going to be so expensive that we just can't afford to buy one of them? Or some people have even actually bought both of them. So, people obviously have money. The people that actually want these consoles have the money
to actually buy them.
So that's very good to see. And, the industry is not dying. Like, some people are thinking, okay, maybe the industry isn't as strong as it once was. But from these sales, clearly it is. And it's on an upward
swing. This kind of happens all the time where a certain market of the computer gaming industry goes into a little bit of a lull. Like the console gaming industry for a while, coming up to the end of the last generation, went into a bit of a lull because everybody knew it was coming to the end of that generation. Mm-hmm. The developers knew, and then the players intuitively started to know as well. And things go into a natural lull. But people see that, and they think, it's dying. It was the same thing with PC gaming at the end of the last console cycle. It was like, PC gaming's dying because people aren't playing as many anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to strength to strength. And it's the same with consoles. There's lulls. Don't freak out every time it happens.
Yeah.
Lulls were had.
Yes.
Lulls were had.
Just
okay.
That word.
So, more sales news. So, Assassin's Creed, one of the Ubisoft's top franchises, has sold a total of 73 million units.
Wow.
Since, I think, the original Assassin's Creed came out in 2007.
I believe it did, yeah.
So, in the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, we've seen 73 million units sold of these things.
And that's across how many games?
There's one,
mm-hmm.
There's two.
There was a game, no, sorry, not a game, but there was a DS one as well. There was one on the DS.
Okay.
Then,
in terms of the console releases, the major releases,
the major
there'll
release,
be
so
one,
so
two,
one,
two, the two expansions, well, not expansions, but the two kind of
standalone,
that's extended off two.
Brotherhood
and Revelations.
Yeah.
Revelations,
and then we got three.
And then we
had four.
Black Flag.
Yeah.
The one for the Vita.
The one for the Vita as well, yes.
Yeah.
That counts.
Yeah.
And there might have been, I think there's one for the PSP as well.
Was there?
Yeah, there's one. Bloodlines or something. I think it was called Bloodlines.
Okay.
That's just about 10 games right there. But of course, the console ones sold the most. The Vita one didn't sell extremely well, and the PSP one maybe sold, I think, 500,000 units to 1 million units, something like that. It wasn't majorly impressive, but this just shows you why they're annualizing the franchise. I mean, if the franchise is selling 73 million units in 7 years, I mean, they could just keep milking the franchise, keep making more and more money. And why not? I mean, from a business standpoint, that makes sense.
It's not like any of their games have been awful.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like, they've been making bad games. They're iterative games. They haven't really done anything extremely new in the last number of years, but...
But the whole genre is new, like
the whole parkour, yeah, I suppose.
That's good, yeah. And the battle system, at least in the first and second game, were quite innovative.
Yeah.
So they're just building that, they're making great games, and they're selling more copies.
It entirely depends on your opinion of those games. I mean, I know some people think that Assassin's Creed is just the definition of everything that is wrong with the AAA industry. The way the parkour basically plays itself, the way the combat is just, you know, counter them as they come at you one at a time, very politely. You know, and some people just think that's just completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
It makes you feel good. Yeah, it does. I mean, I see the entertainment value in it, but I don't know how I feel so much about just the constant iteration. Because I think that was the problem with Revelations and Brotherhood. I think they were good games, but they iterated so heavily on number two. And eventually, I couldn't be bothered. Like, I played Brotherhood, and I was just like, okay, whatever. And then Revelations came out, and I was like, I'm not buying this. And I still, to this day, I haven't played it, because I just cannot be arsed.
So, what other news is there today?
Okay, we have GameStop news. GameStop are closing 120 of their stores with a focus on mobile.
So they're closing their stores to focus more on not games.
It's called GameStop 3.0.
They have a chain of stores in America that sell secondhand mobiles.
Yeah, it's called Spring Mobile, and then they have one for Macs, Simply Mac as well.
Yeah, so they're focusing on those, which is not the best news.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if considering they have about 6,500 global chains, brick and mortar locations, 120 to 130 of them being closed doesn't really, it's not a big impact on GameStop's business.
That's
what I mean?
Well, I mean, like, let's just start off by saying, how many stores again was it?
Closing?
Yeah.
120.
That's 120, isn't it?
Like, that is a lot of GameStop employees suddenly out of a job. So, I mean,
it's not good
for the start.
Yeah, it's not good for the towns where this is actually happening. Definitely in terms of the jobs. But for GameStop, I don't think it's going to impact. At least for now. Right now, it's not going to have a big impact.
I think the change of direction that they're trying to broadcast here, where they're focusing on mobile, is the big concern.
Definitely. I mean, they've been in brick and mortar into selling video game copies for God knows how long. And them shifting to more of a digital and mobile preference. You know, it's weird. It's weird to see. It's interesting. But I mean, they're obviously noticing the shift to digital. You know, I mean, you can buy digital games on PS4, on Xbox One, on Steam.
€70 as opposed to 60.
Yeah, I mean, it's right now. Yeah, it's obviously not ideal, but you can buy smaller indie games for much cheaper. You get them for $10, $15, €15, whatever.
Exactly.
So I mean, there's options. There's always options.
It makes perfect sense for them to do this. It makes perfect financial sense. I just think it's almost offensive to the games industry that they're doing this. But I mean, that's just a completely personal opinion. It works for them. They're going to make more money. They're going to sell more games. So I guess it's up to them what they do with their business.
This is the truth at the end of the day.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. There's some PlayStation 4 news. So there's been a long-awaited patch incoming for the PlayStation 4. It's the 1.7 update. It's going to be coming out on Wednesday, the 30th of April. And it will bring a share factory feature, meaning users can perform basic edits on their captured videos and save them to their external drive, and this will make uploading to YouTube much easier. They also have the option to turn HDCP off, which will allow users to use their own capturing devices. And another interesting feature, actually the most interesting for me, is the ability to preload games that you pre-ordered. So just like on Steam, you can buy pre-purchase a game and you'll have a time window of maybe 1 or 2 days before the game launches where you can download the game. And then once the game comes out, you can play it at launch. So that usually is midnight. So if you really, really want to play a game and you're anticipating it for a very long time, it's very handy for someone just pre-purchase a game, preload it, and it's good to go.
Like Child of Light.
Exactly. Any game. I mean, games nowadays are, you know, quite large in size, especially for Xbox One and PS4. So this is a very welcome addition.
Definitely.
It's
quite interesting. Yeah, it's interesting.
I'm really interested. Sorry, while you're interrupting.
But it's the sort of thing that they promised when the console was coming out, that it would have all these features. So it's interesting that they're
it's good to see them deliver
future updates, yeah.
But yeah, that's the way it works with software. I mean, you can promise them what you want, but at the end of the day, you're not going to make all those promises aren't going to be there day one.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they tried to get the console out with as many features as possible, but you know, over time the console and the ecosystem will develop, just like for the Xbox One and PS4. I mean, it will take time, but we'll see more and more features come out.
It'll happen.
Look forward to it.
It's interesting. I mean, for me, the most interesting part of that update is the addition of the ability to use your own video capture software on device.
Yeah,
and I think that's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, I think Sony are kind of really realizing just how good the Let's Play community is for their marketing, for the marketing of games in general, for the games populace, and how much people love that. And I think the fact that they're directly appealing to people who make videos, who produce that content, and trying to make their lives easier with regards to making that content is really cool.
Definitely. Some more next gen news. So we have the Xbox One launching in Japan. They've released their announced date, it's coming out in September of 2014. So that's almost a year after it's come to the US and Europe and other regions, which is quite a bit of
a
delay.
A lot of time.
But I mean, it's no surprise. The Xbox 360 did not do well when they launched in Japan. And I think, if I remember correctly, it did launch roughly around the same time as it launched in the US and Europe. So I think they've kind of realized that there isn't as much demand. So why not, you know, wait a little bit and wait till there's more games that these consumers might be interested in.
Hmm, certainly.
Why not?
I have actually seen, I can't remember the article right now, I'll hopefully be able to link it in the show notes, but I have seen an article somewhere that was discussing how they have essentially lost the kind of console market there already, because you can get Xbox One over in Japan, but you'll get a bootleg one, you'll get one that's been smuggled in somebody's suitcase from America. And even right now, like the way it is, just people aren't that interested in it.
Exactly. So, I mean, the Japanese have never been interested in some of the major releases that the Western audiences have been interested in.
The
just the way it goes. I mean, they really enjoy their Monster Hunters, their, you know, their RPGs, that type of game, you know.
Yeah.
While the Western audience do enjoy those games as well, and they love when Japanese games come over, these more niche titles, Japanese audience is still heavily influenced, and you know, it's kind of ingrained in their society where these games are just the games that they know and love, and they're not really willing to.
I wonder if they're a really hardcore Witcher fan club in
Japan. Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't people over in Japan that don't enjoy Western games. It's just there's not as many of them, or enough of them, for Microsoft to, you know, push their console as strongly as it does in other regions.
I believe it's just the cultural difference between the West and the East. There's just like certain things that when you look at their games, there are certain tropes, there are certain cultural themes that come true. They come true in all forms of art, in every medium, from painting to film to video games. And there are certain, like, you know, again, tropes and themes that come true in Western games over and over again. And there are certain ones that come true Eastern games over and over again. And they just tend to appeal more to the audiences that they originated from. Just
so you brought up an interesting point there. Are video games an art form?
Ah, well, we could probably have.
We could have
a whole podcast, a separate podcast of this, and we could discuss it every week.
And we probably will.
Probably.
But for now.
That was actually kind of a joke, because
none
of us would argue against that.
No, of course we wouldn't. But, you know, it's still something we have to discuss.
I mean, it's a very interesting topic. I mean, we can debate it for hours and hours.
No, we can't, because we are right. It's not a debate.
Everybody else is wrong.
We don't have anyone else to try and counter our opinion.
We wouldn't be debating, we'd be correcting.
It's true.
We'd just be gushing, really.
So a company by the name of Rocket Cat Games announced a title by the name of Wayward Souls recently, and they have an interesting proposition for their business model and the way they're going to be releasing their game on the iOS store. What they're going to do is they're going to release the game at full price, $5 at launch, and subsequently, as the game matures and as they add more and more updates, they're going to increase the price of the game. So, for example, they add a new update, a large update, and they would add an extra $1 to the price point. So say the game, they release an update in December of this year, the game will go up to $6, and if they release another update next year, it'll go up by a dollar again and again and again. So that it's very different to what you usually see, where games actually decrease in price over time. So I think they're trying to bait the media to
because it's just a marketing strategy, and it's a great one. So every news website, including the Games Blurb, has mentioned this pricing strategy, and it's getting them publicity. And I'm probably going to get the game if it ever comes out on Android.
Yeah, it's a. I mean, it's an interesting game. I think they're touting it as a big full-fledged RPG release. It's going to be like a full-fledged game on any console, and they think that the $5 price tag is more than reasonable.
I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable for mobile apps to charge up to $10, $20 for a game. I mean, people are less likely to play it, but it's a quality product. It's a quality product, and the price has to be paid.
It's been proven that mobile users have actually paid upwards of €10 for games. I mean, we have XCOM Enemy Unknown came out recently. I think it only came out on Android a couple of days ago, and they're charging, I think, €9 or €10 for that game.
But it's
a full-fledged game. I mean, this game came out on PC, on consoles. It's like a 30, 40-hour experience. I mean,
great game, by the way. Great
yeah,
game.
Excellent game. I mean, if you are interested in a tactical squad shooter for Android or iOS, definitely
I pick it up on any device.
Yeah,
it's
any
game.
Device, it's fantastic.
I would just like to call... I would just like to point out that I called it on the very first day I played it. I did say this game.
He has said this to me multiple times. He has.
The controls and the interface was designed to be played on mobile.
Yeah, I remember telling him, "Nah, I mean, come on. I understand where you're coming from, and the UI elements are actually quite big. But I was kind of thinking in terms of the consoles. They had to scale the UI for consoles as well, and that's why the UI had to be quite larger. But yeah, you were right. Actually, their vision was to bring it out on mobile. So
I mean, nothing wrong with it.
No,
game,
I mean,
it should be spread to more mediums,
and modern devices are like powerful enough to really facilitate a game that's that good, that has that kind of scope, and that you can play perfectly with that kind of interface.
I don't feel like it took away from the PC experience very much. I think they struck a nice balance there.
I certainly think they did too.
But if they focused straight on PC, it could have been better in some ways.
Yeah.
I feel. But
definitely.
But getting back to Wayward Souls' pricing strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean we.
It's grand.
We think it's interesting, and we're willing to see. Like, I'm interested to see how they do, and if they actually make more sales when they launch, or if there's if people just don't buy the game as the game increases in price. I mean, I don't know how it's going to work out for them.
It's going to be an interesting experiment.
It's going to be an interesting experiment.
I think it's going to affect it very much. People who are going to buy it at the beginning are still going to buy it.
Yeah.
And then in the future, people will just go and they will see this game and it's $8. They don't care what it was before. Mm-hmm. They'll just buy it for $8.
And like I will say, I've been lucky enough to play a lot of games that have gotten big content updates over the years. I was a big player of Team Fortress 2, which got tons of free content updates. Terraria it went free to play, but for a long time it was actually just getting 100% free content updates, and you just paid in your initial fee and that's it, no free to play. Terraria is another game that has had gigantic expansion pack sized updates come completely for free. I don't think it's unreasonable, if you're updating your game that often with high quality content, to increase the price a little bit that people enter in at. And for people who enter in early, it's a good investment. For people who enter in later, they're still paying you for your work. I don't think it's unreasonable. It's nice to get free updates, don't get me wrong. It's really good. But I don't think it's unreasonable.
I know this is going to start an entirely new conversation. But I'd like to ask you about Starbound. How is that going?
Okay.
I've been quite interested in it, and the thing I'm not sure about it is the early access side of it.
Yeah, and that is a problem for me so far. Thanks for bringing this up. This is actually an interesting thing. I really was into Starbound like from the very beginning, and I mean like when it was initially just a couple of mocked up proof of concept UI screenshots on NeoGAF, before it had a website, before it had a blog, before it had a name. I saw this thing and I was kind of like, ooh, the concepts in this game sound cool, the graphic style they're going for looks cool, ooh, it'll be mechs, it'll be this, it'll be procedural generation. I was in love with it from the very start. I paid for it, like I pre-ordered it as soon as I can, and I have a rule where I don't pre-order games anymore, but I pre-ordered the shit out of that, and I got like the tier 2 pre-order, which is like just like 3 tiers or 4 tiers. And when it finally came out in the early access model, it's the same thing with all kind of, you know, all of these early access games. There's just the content, the vision that they sold me on isn't there yet, and I've begun to question whether it will ever be there at this point.
That was exactly my next question. Like, will that vision ever appear? Because, I mean, these early access games, they're just in beta forever.
Yeah, this is just it.
I'm going to bring up the example of Minecraft, a very popular game.
Certainly.
It is out of beta now, technically, but what has really changed between the line of before beta and after beta?
Yeah, I mean, they've added so many new features and elements to the game.
And adding them now, they're still...
I know, but that's the thing. Visual. I mean, is the game even on version 1.0 yet?
It is. I believe it's actually on 2.
So when is an early access game ever completed? Especially a game like Starbound promises infinite content.
Yes. Well, the idea behind Starbound is that the infinite content should come from procedural generation, from very clever algorithms, and also they wanted to kind of implement a sort of... sort of like in Neverwinter Nights, where you have a sort of dungeon master system where people can create these dungeons and there will be an active player having an impact on your game as you go along. Which is really cool, but completely non-existent at the moment. That is worth mentioning.
So then, simple question, when should I buy the game? Should I buy it now? Should I wait 6 months? Should I wait a year? Should I wait 5 years?
It all depends on what you expect. Classic. Yeah, exactly. See, it all depends on what you expect to get out of it right now. If you go in right now, what you will get is you will get a spaceship. You will get 3 sectors of space, which are just procedurally generated and technically infinite. The planets all have their own unique flora and fauna, which are procedurally generated, within certain limits. Like, you know, you will start to see certain parts and certain plant parts repeat themselves, but they all have different gravity. Some places are actually just asteroid fields. Some places have no atmosphere because they're moons. And it's pretty cool just to fly around this big sandbox universe that's just full of all these crazy things. But
so in a Kotaku sense... in a Kotaku review game sense, should I buy this game?
Well, right now it's not even out, so it's more like, should I be looking into this game and thinking about buying it?
Well, I think
in the future.
What's the difference between early access and buying a full game? There is no.
I mean, you're paying the same price.
Should you consider this game right now? Yes, but you should have a look at some Let's Plays, you should have a look at some videos and stuff. You should see what the game is right now, and you should decide for yourself whether or not you're comfortable paying with just that. I think if you're going to buy into early access, you should look at what that game is right now, and you should say, this game could be like this, and this they could never update it again. It could be like this forever. Am I happy with paying this amount of money for this game right now?
Mm-hmm.
If you are, by all means buy in.
Okay.
Maybe in the future you'll get more. As for Starbound, right now, personally, I just don't feel like the vision is there, but the developers are pretty cool guys, and I think they will eventually deliver on it, even if it takes time.
Okay.
So, have a look at it. If it seems like it'll be your thing right now, definitely consider it.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay. So, the next topic of conversation are some new trailers and gameplay videos.
Ooh.
Interesting. Ooh.
Shiny.
So, yeah, there's been quite a few interesting games that have seen new trailers, new videos, that
and
sort of stuff.
Speaking of shiny,
we have Evolve, which is a game made by the Left 4 Dead developers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a game where you have a team of four. Main characters, they each have their own abilities. It's a first-person shooter. It's a squad-based shooter, so it's very cooperative. You're trying to chase down this huge, humongous beast.
Which is a fifth player.
A player actually gets to control this massive beast. So if you think back to Left 4 Dead, it's kind of like playing the tank.
All the time.
And the tank, you know, basically all the tank did was throw giant boulders at you and smash you with his fist.
Yeah.
Here in this game, this beast has so many different abilities. He can jump. He can do this little. In the video we were watching, he jumped into the air and did like this body slam. He
breathe fire, throw rocks.
Yeah.
And of course,
jump on people and try to eat creatures to gain more power. It's
basically that boss section from Left 4 Dead taken and expanded
into an entire
into
game.
A full game.
I think the really cool thing for us, and this is in the name of the title, is that when you're playing the creature, your initial task is to evade and to sneak and to try and get, you know, stealthy kills if you can, or to just, you know, generally try and be, you know, elusive and evolve. Your character literally evolves as time goes on and you become more powerful. That's the cool thing.
And at the end,
you become a monster.
Yeah.
Well, you're already a monster.
But yeah, they are.
But you become a monster.
You become
big and you start
huge.
Stomping.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You start destroying stuff.
You get swole, bro.
So, from the trailer, what do you guys think? What's the thing you're most excited about this title?
I just want to play a monster.
Yeah. let's face it, you know, every game and its mother has a four-player co-op these days, but, you know, a game where you get to be a gigantic monster and run around and stomp on people and, well, that's only one section of the game, as I said, you know, at the start you're kind of being elusive and, you know, it just sounds like it could be, if done right, and I, you know, these guys have a good pedigree, so I think they could do it right. I think it's going to be really, really exciting. That's what interests me about it.
I really feel like they went the whole way with the cooperative aspect of it, where you can actually, like, there's healing, there's shields. Sorry, that's in every game. But you can plan down, like, sensors to know if a beast has passed by a certain point. Like, it's real.
And you can unlock them. Yeah, one thing I was also noticing in the video, you have this little device that you throw at the ground, and then you activate your gun, and what it does is it traps the monster in this dome area. So basically, you create an arena type area where you can actually maybe take him down earlier, or lock him down to a specific area when he's weak, when he's not at his strongest point, you know, before he's actually evolved.
But what I actually feel like is that even though I'm at his strongest point, like, if they encounter him at the very beginning of the game, he can still take a lot of punishment.
Oh, he can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that you see someone and you die. No, it takes a long time to kill him at any point in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, I'd like to see what role each of these four characters has, because, you know, when you're playing Left 4 Dead, there's no difference in who you play.
It's just a character.
You grab a gun, you shoot some zombies, that's basically it.
Well, Vlad, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yes.
Because if you go to YouTube, you can watch the interactive trailer, where you can watch it from the perspective. Of any of the heroes.
So yeah, there's a trailer up on YouTube, and it's 40 minutes long. So if you have the time, do check it out. I personally only checked out the 8-minute trailer, the demo that they showed, where they basically just funneled you down a certain path, and one of the various outcomes that actually occurred. Well, if you watch the 40-minute trailer, you can kind of pick and decide. I think it's one of those interactive videos where you kind of click on.
Yeah,
and what you want to see.
Video,
yeah, yeah.
From a
yeah.
Perspective.
So there's a lot more to watch there if you're interested in seeing more. But moving on now, so that's one big game we want to talk about. Now we have Watch Dogs, which is developed by Ubisoft. It was announced a year ago, two years ago at E3, 2 years ago. And, you know, I was quite impressed when they first announced that it came out of nowhere. Everyone was shocked.
It was just like, wow, what is this?
Yeah, and it really looked next gen. Back in 2012, the next gen consoles hadn't even been announced.
Yeah,
so.
And everybody was looking at it going,
this looks
there's
too pretty.
New consoles coming, isn't there?
It was too pretty to be on current gen systems. Of course, they were demoing on a PC at the time. And it was a high-end PC, that's why the game looked so good. But
I still will.
So moving on, so where we're at now is the game's about to launch. It's coming out, I think, in May. And they've shown off the multiplayer gameplay video and preview. And some of the media has had a chance to play through about 4 or 5 hours of the game, and they've shared their insights and what they thought of the game. And from what I've heard, there's a lot of positive response towards the game, and everyone seems to be quite excited. I mean, personally, the game looks really pretty. It looks like a massive world that you can explore. I really love the hacking aspect to it.
Yeah, certainly. That is the star.
My favorite thing about it is the animation.
it's just the jacket.
The jacket animation is what makes the game for me. I'm gonna buy it based on the jacket animation.
Just walk around the streets, do nothing.
Yeah, I'll just be like a citizen, just walking around the streets, enjoying the sights and animation.
I really think one of the cool things I thought, we were just watching the trailer again there, and we noticed that every NPC, you could actually check out what their net worth is and what they're currently doing, what their occupation is, that sort of thing. Like,
Cthulhu,
it's interesting.
Enthusiast.
Yeah, Cthulhu Enthusiast is one of them.
And this would be our friend Dean here.
Clown fetishist.
Well, Cthulhu Enthusiast, right? Guys?
Like right now he's wearing a hoodie that says Cthulhu on it, and it has a little chibi Cthulhu.
Indeed.
Indeed, that is what's happening.
That would be our It wasn't occupation, it was more of an interest. Anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
In any case,
well, yeah,
you can scan every civilian as you walk past
mm-hmm.
them, and you know, it's, you know, I don't think it's an amazing or innovative feature, but just to be able to, you know, look at all these people, get a little snapshot of their face, you get a little bit of info about them, you know, if there's a criminal record, you know, just all these
quick
details.
Side note,
I think
really
quick
interesting.
Side note,
it's
just interrupt the podcast for 1 second. In Golden Sun 2, you had a mind reading ability where you could read people's minds of any NPC in that game.
Oh yeah, you actually could.
And you could, you know what they were thinking. So it's been done before.
Well,
I
don't think that's
I don't think that's quite the same thing.
I
didn't say it's innovative or anything though. Like, it's just, I just think it's a nice touch.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite the same thing, but. Yeah, I like the fact that you can kind of interact with all of these NPCs, and there's so many of them. If you were saying Golden Sun, I mean,
I'm just saying as
a. I know. It's just a side note, but like this is a living, breathing world, and I think this just adds to the atmosphere of the game. Knowing that you can actually find a little bit out, you know, about these characters that aren't playable, and
yeah,
it makes it more alive.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly, it makes the world feel like there's a little bit of.
If you compare it to another game, an open world game like Grand Theft Auto 5, I mean, that game feels alive, but not because of the NPCs per se. I mean, it's more because of like how large and expansive the world is and the characters you interact with.
I would actually counter that statement because I think one of the things which I was really impressed by with GTA 5 was I remember one point I was just walking and I was just exploring. It wasn't even part of the level. I was just walking through a construction site in the early morning. There was no one there, and I waited around for a while, and then I noticed that I think they just spawned in like when I wasn't looking. I don't think they actually drove there or anything like that. That would have been very impressive. But no, I think they just spawned in when I wasn't looking. But construction workers started to filter into the site. And then they didn't just stand around. One of them started using a jackhammer. And one of them started like sawing. And one of them was like going up onto the scaffolding,
wow.
You know, using the ladders.
That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it was just... It really, really, really was a lovely touch. And I think it's the same thing here with Watch Dogs, where you can just look at all these little civilians and they have these tiny little stories attached to them. That you can, you know, spy on them with,
no.
And it's brilliant. It's just a lovely touch. It's
yeah.
very interesting. It adds that little bit of extra depth to a world like that. Yeah, and I think open world games need all the extra little bits
definitely.
Of depth that they can get.
Otherwise, they just feel barren and dead.
Have you ever played No More Heroes?
No, actually, no.
There's a little open world than that, and it is. It shouldn't even be there. It's like you're walking around a glitched out area of the game.
Mm.
It's just nothing.
But yeah, just one more thing I want to mention in terms of Watch Dogs. I'm really excited to find out more about the multiplayer. They've showed it off, and basically it's a drop-in system where you don't have to enter a lobby to play with other players. They just pop in. There's missions that come up.
They start controlling NPCs, don't they?
Yeah, what happens is, they jump into your world, and you get a message that pops up on the top right of your screen saying, this player is engaging with your world, they're hacking in, or
so
something like
game.
That, yeah.
Stealing your points.
Yeah, but in your game world, they don't appear as the main protagonist. They actually appear as an NPC, so you don't really know who's who and what's what.
And
you kind
of have to find out.
So yeah, one of the missions or activities you can do is you can while this other player is hacking into your game, your task to actually find out who they are. And locate the playable character, not the NPC. So in the trailer, they showed the main character walking into a crowded area and actually firing his gun just so that, you know, the NPCs would run away in opposite directions. And then from that, you can kind of tell who's the real player and who's not, because the real player wouldn't react the same way as an NPC would. So I thought that was kind of interesting, and I'd definitely be interested to have been playing it myself and seeing what it really feels like. But right now, I mean, from the demos they've showed, it definitely sounds like it's something new, and it's different, definitely different.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this idea where you take over a character that looks like an NPC, and you know, you basically just kind of have to act like an NPC whilst you're hacking another person's game is a little bit similar to the way Assassin's Creed does multiplayer. And that's actually very, very... It becomes a very, very intense, very interesting game of cat and mouse, because you are constantly hunting someone in that and also constantly being hunted by someone else. And this sounds like it's a little bit derivative of that, which I think is a good thing.
Definitely.
I think it could be very interesting.
Okay, so enough of Watch Dogs. One more trailer gameplay, new trailer we want to talk about was Dragon Age Inquisition. So they've actually announced the release date for this game. It's October 7th. So that doesn't really give them that much time in terms of development time. I mean, we haven't really seen that much of this game.
Just before we continue, what are your opinions of Dragon Age 1 and 2? Just to put some backdrop to this discussion?
Well, I never finished one or two, but I played a fair portion of one. And I really enjoyed it because it kind of harkened back to that old school top-down RPG, you know, kind of like Baldur's Gate, Icewind Dale, them sort of games. I really enjoyed that because of that. And you could pause the game. It was very... Even before they released the game, they were saying it was a spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate.
They actually said that.
The development team said that. So
that's exactly what it was.
And that's what was
absolutely...
And what I kind of hated about the second game was because they kind of threw that out the window and then focused more on the mainstream market.
They made it more of an action RPG.
They
throw it out the window.
They grabbed it.
They bodily flung themselves and it out the window, landed on the street, started pounding it in the face, then set it on fire, then took the hot ash and threw it into a lake and poisoned the lake.
And all that thing they called streamlining.
Yes.
As you can see, Dean's quite passionate about the game. I actually
finished
Dragon Age 2, and I actually did like it. I liked it very much.
Oh, actually, I go on, but it wasn't a bad game.
No.
It was a good game.
It was just after the first game, it just seemed such a departure from what the first game actually was.
My biggest problem with the second game was the...
Asset reuse.
It was the same area. You were stuck to the one location for the whole game.
After 20 hours and halfway through the game, like, oh, great. I've explored every single crevice of the city. I get to move on now. And I never did.
Another 20 hours.
I mean, like, if the game was 10 hours shorter, it would be a great game.
Yeah.
There's some great choices. I really enjoy the story. I romanced all the male characters because you can, apparently. Even the ones that weren't romanceable in the first game, so they all of a sudden grew an appreciation for the hawk. The hawk.
So now that you know what we think of the first two games, let's give us some opinions on the third game and what we think of what we've seen so far.
You remember the thing where he said about the hot ash pounding and
the cock pounding and the ash?
They seem to have gone the full way with that and made it a hack and slash game.
Well, from what we've seen, we haven't seen much gameplay, but
yes,
from the gameplay they've shown.
But they do keep saying over and over again that they will cater to the Dragon Age 1 fans, and I'm willing to give them the chance, and I would like to see And I'm I actually believe that to a point they will pull through, and I would like to see whether it's actually a good game in spite of the fact that it's a hack and slash.
You mean EA?
Look, I think what this is going to be is, at the end of the day, it's going to be a nicely polished game. I think they have definitely learned their lessons from Dragon Age 2, because Dragon Age 2 was, at the end of the day, we've said some nice things about it here. You cannot deny it is a cash-in. I'm sorry, it is a cash-in. Okay, it came out 1 year later, you reused tons of assets, it was a cash-in. This looks like they've learned from their mistakes, they're trying to make good on it, they're trying to make amends, but it's not going to be a spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate, okay? And they say they're going to try and cater to fans of Dragon Age Origins. Unless you make another spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate, they're not going to be appeased. They're not going to take any kind of compromise, and they shouldn't either. It's going to be a hack and slash, or it's going to be a tactical RPG. And from the little snippets of gameplay, which we've seen from the quote-unquote gameplay trailer, it's going to be a hack and slash. And that'll be fine.
Yeah.
But I just wish they wouldn't be disingenuous about it.
Yeah.
Call it Dragon Age.
Yes.
They could call it something else.
What a great idea.
Create a new franchise.
Or it's just create as a spin-off in the Dragon Age universe.
Yeah. But what I do want to say is I watched the trailer and all I could think was, wow, this trailer looks damn pretty. It's made with the new Frostbite engine, the same engine that runs Battlefield 4. And wow, it looks so pretty.
So what it will have will be a great story.
With no substance?
I believe they'll have a great story. And I believe they'll be pretty. So it'll be an interactive film with hack and slash quick time events. Looking forward to it.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
But speaking of top-down RPGs, there's one game Oleg here is very, very interested in talking about.
I paid for it on Kickstarter, and now they're announcing that they're going to have a deluxe edition. I'm tempted to buy the deluxe edition as well as the Kickstarter game. Because so it's a game made by Larian Studios, and they've made Divine Divinity and Beyond Divinity. Now they're continuing the franchise with Divinity Original Sin, and it looks absolutely amazing. They recently released a video comparing what their game was like before the Kickstarter and after, and just how far they've come since a year ago is just absolutely brilliant. I mean, all of these spells, are interacting with each other, so you can evaporate a pool of water with fireball and to turn into steam, and then you can electrocute the steam and electrocute enemies with it. I'm really assuming that if you cast a fireball on a zombie, it turns into a skeleton, which I think is just great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you have anything to say, Dean? Haven't seen much of the game, but what's your
opinion? I showed you the first trailer today.
Literally, I had heard of it. I had heard the name thrown around, and I heard this vague kind of excited buzz in the background of my consciousness, because I don't know, I just didn't even pay that much attention to it, honestly. And I watched my first trailer not an hour ago, and it looks pretty goddamn amazing. I'm going to have to try and clear some time in my schedule for it by the looks of it.
Maybe it's a spiritual successor to Dragon Age 1.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which it really isn't.
Really isn't. It's much better than that, guys.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it looks really good.
It looks really, really fun.
I hope it lives up to our expectations, because I've been looking forward to a game, like an old traditional, old school top-down RPG for a long time. And, one of the things I would like to mention is it has dropping co-op mode as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we wanted to, we could... going on the game, guys.
Yeah,
we should definitely sometime make a podcast about it.
Definitely, why not?
We could do it next day.
I'm definitely actually considering buying this at this stage, and the reason is because, again, this just kind of came out of the blue for me, and it's just like, I just watched this trailer, and it's like, oh, look at this amazing game that I didn't even know existed, and it's coming out now. I'm like, okay, yeah. No, I like when a game takes me by surprise. If I hype myself up for something like Starbound, I usually end up being disappointed by it.
Yeah.
But if I can actually avoid all media coverage of a game completely, and then it comes out and it's incredible.
It blows your mind.
Like, oh, yes.
I would just like to point out one last interesting feature before we move on, is that Vlad mentioned that you have drop-in co-op gameplay. And let's say you're interacting with an NPC in that time.
Oh, yeah.
And there's multiple answers to a question that the NPC has asked. The party members can actually argue based on what answer they want to give.
Yeah.
And then that will affect how the quest proceeds.
Very cool, very cool.
I think the great thing about that is that most people are just going to argue just because no other game has that feature.
Yeah.
You just argue for the sake. It's like, this is cool, we can argue.
This is kill control. It's like, maybe not on a quest.
Yeah, but the game comes out on June the 20th. They just released an announce date. Announced to release it. That's what I wanted to say.
Why are they Bethesda?
They have been delaying for quite a few months. It was all just to make the game better, which I really approve of. You can actually play it on Early Access now, which I've been avoiding like the plague.
Yeah.
Because I want to play the full game when it comes out.
Yeah. It's coming out on PC, so...
Trust me, it's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay, so that's... We have a topic here we wanted to discuss this week. It's basically remastered games. There's been a trend lately in the industry where a company has been releasing remastered versions of previous generation titles and the current generation titles. So I'll give you an example. There was the Tomb Raider Definitive Edition was released a couple of months back for the PS4 and Xbox One, which was basically a high-res 1080p, better textures, 60 FPS, all this stuff, extra bells and whistles. 60 FPS on the Xbox One and PS4. So basically, it was a slightly better version of the previous gen version of the game. Also, another game that was recently announced was The Last of Us, remastered edition.
Freudian slip.
I always like love talking about Uncharted. I don't know why. Whenever I mention The Last of Us, Uncharted seems to come out, but. Yeah, the Last of Us Remastered Edition, which again promises 1080p, 60 FPS, better graphics, same game. What do we think of this trend? I mean, we as PC gamers have kind of been, we've been living in a time where we can, you know, crank our graphics up to the highest and play at 60 FPS if we want to, if we have the hardware. So, I mean, while this doesn't really affect us, how does it affect the console industry?
Well, we've been kind of spoiled because PC has, we can play any backlog of any PC game that was ever released if you try hard enough. The console people don't have that luxury. So when a great game like The Last of Us came out in the last gen, I think it only makes sense for it to come out on the next gen consoles. In an upgraded version, because the people who don't own the Xbox 360 or the PS3 or the Wii.
You. Or
well,
we.
I'm not sure, quite sure where that lies within the generations. They don't have the luxury of playing the older games because they're not backwards compatible. And
yeah,
that's fine.
That is the problem. I mean,
no, that's not fine. But well, no, sorry. You're
I'm just
point,
saying
so.
It's fine because look,
it's
hardware limitations.
Yeah.
It's not like, I'm not sure, maybe they did it on purpose, but it's hardware limitations.
They might have done it on purpose. I mean, I'm sure if they really tried hard enough, they would be able to, they would have been able to support backwards compatible games on the Xbox 360 and the PS3.
But why? If you can sell them again?
Exactly, that's the point. I mean, it was not in their best interest to do so, even if they had the ability to do so, they didn't do it. And this leaves these remastered and HD editions of games coming out.
I mean, I like it. But I like it to the point where it has to hit a certain price point for me to be willing to pay for a game that
yeah.
I already paid
for.
For
example, the Last of Us Remastered Edition, it's going to be priced at $60, so that's basically retail release.
That is a
full price
game
at launch is $60. But what you get with it is all the DLC. So the DLC does cost about $15-$20 on top of that, or 50 euro, whatever region you're in. So that does add a bit of extra cost to the game. So technically, you are saving a bit of money.
Only if you didn't buy the original.
Only if you didn't buy the original, of course.
I mean, if you never bought the original and you're buying this for the first time for $60, that's fine. But I don't know. I wouldn't be willing to pay for the same game that I already own just to play it
slightly faster, better. Crispier.
Yeah. All that stuff is good stuff. I know all that stuff. That's some tasty stuff right there. But, I mean, I've experienced the game the way it was released the first time.
Mm.
I don't know if I'd pay another €60 to experience
but
it again.
But there's something they've been doing that kind of gets around this where you can trade in your last gen game and pay maybe $10-$20 extra euro extra.
If it's only that much, then I will do
and there's rumors going around that they are willing to do, well, they're looking into doing something similar for the Last of Us. So basically, maybe if they offered the opportunity for gamers to trade in their PS3 version for maybe even at least half or three quarters of the value, that would be very good value, I think.
That would be half. Or sorry, that would be three quarters. But if half, then maybe, I guess. But
that's not unreasonable because when the PS4 just launched and the Xbox One launched, you could trade in your Call of Duty Ghosts game and your Assassin's Creed 4 game as well. And if you paid $10 extra, you're actually able to get the next gen version of it.
Cool.
So I mean, if they do something like that, then I don't see the harm.
You see, for me, I don't like it all at a fundamental level, and it keeps coming back to this lack of backwards compatibility. Now, I know they say that it would cost a lot extra, that there would be hardware limitations, there would be software limitations. Like, I understand. I know for a fact that software emulation is difficult. Hardware emulation is difficult. But there is no point in having a gigantic back catalogue of games that you just can't play on the next iteration of hardware that game originally worked on. It doesn't make sense to me.
Is that because you're a PC gamer and you're used to the fact that you can play games?
To a certain extent, yes. But, I mean, I grew up in the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 period, and PlayStation 2 played PlayStation 1 games. It was fully backwards compatible.
But the PlayStation 3 didn't play PlayStation 2 games.
It didn't, but at that age I had moved on to the PC, of course. Look, I just don't think it is reasonable. Sony, for instance, the PS2 has the largest gaming catalog ever.
To me, it's probably the best gaming console of all time.
Quite arguably, I would say.
To me,
so.
I
would say so too. But you know, you could argue. But what is the point in having that huge back catalog of owning all those games? If your customers own all those games and they can't go back and play them, it just severely yes.
Yeah, so I'm gonna dust off my PS2.
I just think it severely devalues these new pieces of hardware for me.
Yeah,
it definitely.
I know.
Does.
I can be understand.
And then I completely disagree with this whole notion of you can have the same game that you have on your PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 for paying $60. Oh, but it'll have HD textures. It's like, no. The only time I'm ever okay with that is maybe in the case of, say, the Resident Evil remake, where they went back and they literally built the game from the ground again.
But that's a remake.
That is an actual remake.
That's not a remake.
This whole HD spit shine edition.
So,
doesn't appeal to you.
So does this conversation include HD editions of games that were released previously? So
yeah.
does
I mean,
mythology for the PC, is that
it,
for discussion?
Certainly.
But the funny thing about that game is you can play that game on your PC now. I mean, the only reason I'd be tempted to buy this HD edition is because of the slightly prettier texture. So how is that any different to buying a remaster?
I suppose that's a good argument.
First of all, what are the differences in the remaster and a HD remake apart from the price tag?
Not much difference at all.
It,
I mean,
it depends actually on whether or not the remake adds in new content or changes existing content. Again, to harken to the Resident Evil example, if you play
it varies between every game. So if a developer puts enough resources into a game and puts enough time into a game, it's going to show.
Yes,
and definitely. If they don't, the game isn't going to be as impressive as.
But that's why I don't approve of most HD editions, because most of the time it's quite evident that they didn't do very much with it.
It's a cash in almost. Yeah.
They're
adding Steam Workshop features, so basically that means you can add more and more.
Whatever you want,
you can customize all the models in the game.
The Baldur's Gate HD edition.
They put a lot of time into that.
Playable in 1080p. They changed the menus.
Okay, so they actually did.
They made it a little bit more intuitive.
Okay, yeah, because the old menus, that's the thing they're really buying.
But the argument that a lot of reviewers and people on the internet had was you can do all that with mods.
You can, but this brings all the mods into one officially sized package that's.
So is this the streamlined version of the game? Where you can.
Ooh.
If you. I mean.
Edgy.
No. Close throne. I mean, if you mod the game, it's a little bit more complicated, so it requires some actual effort in doing this. And if you see this game on Steam and you're like, oh, this game comes with
all these features,
added features and mods that they developed themselves in house, I could pay a little bit extra for that game
and just get it along with an extra copy of the original.
That's a very good point. I don't have an argument against that. I suppose it's up to the individual person and the individual game. So depending on what they've added to the HD remake, whether you can easily do that with mods or you can't, or it depends on your affiliation with mods. So it's just up to individual people. I mean, as with anything in the world.
Indeed. Well, as a guy who's spent a lot of time modding games, I can tell you that for some people, they just don't want to put in the effort. And I can understand, because it takes a lot of time. So, you know, it just comes down to whether or not you want to spend time, you know, creating an enhanced edition for yourself, or whether you just want to pay some money and boom, there you go.
Yeah.
And you relive an old experience.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's our thoughts on HD remasters and remakes and all these.
It's a bubbling cauldron of.
Were there any thoughts shared, really?
Well, I mean, I think.
Opinions were shouted.
Frankly, I mean, I don't think they're the worst thing to happen to the games industry.
Is Dota 2 a HD remastered edition of Dota 1? Because all the Dota 2 updates still apply to Dota 1.
Actually, arguably, yes.
But wait, but the game is a remix, not a HD remix, because all the animations, everything's changed in that game. The heroes look different.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Also, you have to consider that Dota 2, one of the big draws for it is that it has built in spectating, it has built in features for setting up tournaments, for setting up professional matches, for streaming.
My big draw to it is that it's free.
Yeah.
Well, also, yes.
That's true. Yeah. But anyway. Off topic a little bit there, but let's move on. We're almost finished here, guys. We're just going to discuss what games we've been playing in the last week.
I've just been watching the original Sim videos over and over again. That's what I've been doing.
At least you are honest, though. So I've been playing my Oblivion mod collection, which I've been building for the past while. I talked about building it recently enough on the most recent podcast, 2.5.
You might, if you got that far in the podcast, because
the
audio quality is
so
bad.
Terrible.
But just give us a summary of what your experience is like.
Okay, well,
you're a real fan.
We love you for it.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your support during our early days and our technical issues that have arisen out of our lack of experience. In any case, I've been playing my collection. So I started a new character, and my collection is finally built. I'm happy with it. I'm happy with the way it looks. Great. So I start in the Imperial City, because there's a mod where you start on a ship, you just go to a little piece of paper, and you choose your specialization, your class, the whole deal, and you also choose your conditions in life, so whether you're a manual laborer or a nobleman, whether you're well off.
Cool.
So I said I was a mage, so I said I'm a student of theoretical magic, and I'm wealthy. But then when I spawned in, I had no money because wealthy students still have no money. So I was like, oh shit. So I spawned into the Imperial City and I was like, right, okay, I've got a robe and a dagger and some starting spells, and that's it. I've got no potions. I've got a little bit of food, thankfully, because I started off with like a mod where you need to eat and drink. So I had to take jobs, spit shining shoes in the street. You don't actually do it. It just time skips forward for a little bit, and you get some money based on some like randomly generated variables. But I also had to pay for a place to sleep, and I also had to pay for food. So it took me about an in-game week to get up enough money to get some armor before I could go and raid my first dungeon.
That's wow. Brilliant.
It was awesome. I had so much fun. And also, one of the mods I have installed revamps the city. So I spent the first day in the city just exploring all these areas that I'd never seen before because they were all new, and talking to all these new NPCs, and everything is huge and there's more stuff. When I finally went into the dungeon, it was really dark. It was dark as hell because I had a mod installed called Cavex Obscura, which makes dungeons really dark. So I lit up a torch and I went forward a little bit, and about five guys, because I've got a mod installed that increases the number of enemies that spawn, spotted me immediately, jumped on me. A bunch of them were weak, and I killed them fairly easily because the dungeons have been rebalanced so that there's some weaker NPCs that are always going to be weak hanging around them. But then there was one kind of bossy sort of character, and she was really tough, and she had this unique kind of helmet on. So eventually I was able to take her down. Thankfully, I barely survived that fight. I got this helmet. I was like, this helmet is awesome. It looks a bit dingy, but hey, it's just, I'm starting the game off. It's got great stats. Boom. Delighted. Went over. Oh, there's a chest I can open. And then the chest exploded and killed me. And I hadn't saved.
Game over.
Did you have five?
Oh man, it was crazy. But I had so much fun. If you've ever played like vanilla Oblivion, just consider modding it sometime, because there's such a rich mod community out there. It's very easy to get started, and you can have so much fun.
You're gonna have to come over one day, and I'll pay you to make a bespoke mod collection from Oblivion to experience it in that way. Because I mean, that sounds like life simulator in Oblivion.
That's what I wanted to create. That's what I was going for. It's ridiculous. One, it was a lot of effort. I've basically been considering this collection and trying out different combinations of mods for over a year. But now I've got a kind of definitive collection that I like, and I'm finally being able to really explore it. And it's so much fun. It's great. It's
great to hear you having fun with it.
Yeah,
definitely. So what have I been playing? I've actually finished the game, guys.
Whoa, what?
Whoa!
Yeah!
Can't believe it.
What's the final boss of Dota 2? I assume that's the one you're talking about.
Roshan Squared. I don't know, but...
Please do go on.
But yeah, I actually finished the game. And that game was Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Ah.
Where the game finished.
Where the game. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about it now, folks. I talked a little bit about it last week, but in case you haven't, in case you missed last week or you couldn't hear me.
Basically what we're saying is you should have skipped last week.
This is the week. And basically the game is it's a 3D, how would I describe it? It's a 3D action, not even action, it's an adventure. It's an adventure game. It's a puzzle adventure game.
Seems to be one of those games that kind of defies genre in some ways.
Yeah. It's a tricky one because that game is all about the gameplay and the environment. That's what I kind of noticed about it. The story is very minimal. Basically, you start the game off, and you know it's not really a spoiler. Your father is sick, and you have to find you have to go on an adventure and find the cure. You have to find a vial that you have to come back and. Yeah. And give it to him so he can get better. So you have two characters you actually control, which is different than pretty much any other game, because one character is the older brother. You control him with the left analog stick, and the younger brother, you control him with the right analog stick. So it's kind of awkward at first. It's very weird because you're not really used to doing that sort of thing within a game where you're controlling two characters at the same time.
Yeah.
It's very strange. And not only do you have to run around these characters, you actually have to solve puzzles while controlling them in this really awkward fashion. But the thing is, while it's awkward at first, it kind of grows on you, and you develop a kind of you develop this kind of finesse, and you manage to overcome these obstacles. Yeah, I know.
Finesse.
Finesse.
Finesse
is the word I was looking for. Thank you.
I
didn't
know what you were saying.
I was like, what? Finies?
God, Finies, sir.
Yeah.
Finies after the podcast.
Yeah. So you develop your... While the controls are awkward, they kind of grow on you over time. And I noticed that it was much easier to actually overcome these obstacles. And I found the game to be very simple to play after you actually master the control system. The puzzles aren't very difficult, but the environments are just so beautiful. I mean, you're running through the world. The game isn't particularly graphically impressive. It's just the art style of the game that really makes it shine and makes it beautiful. The game isn't very long. It's about 2 to 3 hours. So, you know, it's not a very long time investment. That's why I recommend anyone picking it up and playing it because it's not an expensive game either. It's about 10-15 euro. And even if you get it on Steam, it's even cheaper. And or on PSN sale, whatever, what have you. But I really enjoyed the story of that game, even though it was so minimalistic. It's told in an interesting way because the characters don't actually speak English. They speak in this kind of Simsy language where they're not really talking, but they're emoting. So you can kind of tell their inference and how they talk, what they're actually implying, and meaning you can actually gauge their emotion from that. And towards the end of the game, I actually kind of teared up a little bit because of the events. You know, it's quite a... It really pulls at the heartstrings, and even though it's a small indie game, it's just as impactful as a AAA game like The Last of Us or BioShock, any of those that games had their moments as well. And I definitely recommend it. It's a very, very interesting game.
Should I buy the game?
Definitely, it's a must buy.
Oh,
I recommend it. Must buy.
Must buy.
Must buy.
Is that just above a yes?
Way above a yes.
Can I call the Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion a must mod?
Yes.
Yes.
Cool. Must mod. Rated as must mod.
5 out of 5. Goodbye again.
So that's what we've been playing. Oleg, since you haven't been playing anything, is there anything you're looking forward to be playing, or
is there anything you would like to talk about related to video games?
Anything at all, just to finish up?
I don't really play video.
Oh, really?
I don't know what I'm really doing at this podcast. I'm really looking forward to playing Child of Light.
Yes,
I'm sure. I don't even
know what that game is.
I don't even know what it is. I don't know what the mechanics are. Well, sorry, it's a 2D turn-based RPG. It's a 2D side-scrolling RPG.
2.5D. It's this kind of semi-3D thing.
So it's ridiculously beautiful looking. I mean, it's absolutely majestic.
It's like an oil painting.
All the NPCs, they all speak in rhyme.
Oh, yes.
And there's actually one NPC that doesn't, and they keep correcting him.
It's funny. Yeah.
And I mean, just for nothing else other than the fact that it's just the most beautiful game I've seen in a very long time. The art style of it is just mind blowing. As soon as I saw it, I pre-ordered it, and just as a note, for £15, I think it's about $20, you actually get a collector's edition with an A2 poster, an art book, a keyring, and the game. Which
it's pretty darn good value.
It is actually good value.
I mean, as far as it goes.
And from what their developers were saying, the game is about 20 hours long, 15 upwards of 10 hours. So you get your money's worth, basically.
It depends on how you play it.
Yeah. So basically, a minimum of 10 hours up to 20 hours, depending on how you play the game.
Yeah.
So wow, I'm really looking forward to this, and it also has a core feature where one of the players controls this wisp type creature and kind of guides you through the environment. I'm not sure how the combat system works with the wisp creature, but
it's turn-based. It's party-based.
Yeah,
game.
Yeah.
So you get your turn to attack and
combat. Cool. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Definitely.
It's like a 2D Final Fantasy, except prettier.
Yeah.
Like all the other 2D Final Fantasies?
No, it's a 2D side-scrolling Final Fantasy.
Ah, thank you.
Okay, guys, so that's the end of our podcast, episode 3. I'm just going to give you our contact details. We have an email, that's gamesblurb@gmail.com. We have a Twitter, that's @thegamesblurb. Here we are, Oleg's Twitter is @OlegBraznyk.
B-R-A-Z-H-N-Y-K.
And we have Dean's, which is @AsbestosCake.
Worst kind of cake.
Terrible
this
cake.
This is the last podcast, and we'll say this again, worst cake.
And we have me, @Vladbeck. So that's us for today, guys. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and send us a quick email or even Twitter, whatever. We'll be happy to hear what you think. Tune in next time. We'll be back next week again. Thanks, guys, and see ya.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.